Hey, friendly reminder, this podcast is not for kids or people who have a stick up their ass.
Friday, 5:58 p.m.
I'm sleeping with my best friend's husband.
I think my uncle killed someone in his suicide.
I am a sugar baby.
I'm a soccer mom addicted to Adderall.
I think my sister is actually my uncle's kid.
My husband bought his hooker a car whenever I was helping
him. I was living with my husband.
What's your secret? Welcome back to another week of Beyond the Secret. My name is Ace Fanning, and I hope that you don't mind, but I'm going to hop up on my little soapbox for a minute, and seeing as this is my podcast, I think that's okay to do. Just appease me for a minute or two or five. I'm not asking you to close your eyes or anything like that. I just want you to do a little rundown for me of your life. Just shut up and do it. I want you to start with the relationships closest to you. People like your spouse or your partner, your kids, your family. And what I want you to do is just run through each of those relationships. And ask yourself, am I truly happy with these relationships? I'm not asking you if each of those relationships is perfect, because that doesn't exist. Ups and downs are a part of life. But does each of those relationships truly bring you happiness? If so, I want you to set a wider net. And start asking yourself the same questions about your friendships and more distant family, one relationship at a time. Write them down or just make a mental checklist. And I want you to really think about it. Are you yourself around this person? Or do you change around this person? Do you feel like this person raises you up? Or tears you down? Do you feel that you can fully express your ideas and beliefs around this person? And I want you to keep going like this until you've gone through every single person in your life. Then I want you to do the same thing with the different places that you associate with. Does your job make you happy? Do you feel like you can be yourself at your church or your gym? Every place you go to. This is a random story, but I used to go to a Subway where this one lady terrified me, and she was always working. And when we moved, I started going to a different Subway, and I shit you not, like, yes, I know, I am dramatic, but switching Subways changed my life, or at least my life every time I had to go to Subway. Because I am someone who takes on all of the feelings around me, and every time that I used to leave Subway, like, I felt myself just being, like, a little bitch because of how that woman made me feel. Anyways, back to the exercise. Life is hard, with or without the pandemic. Life is not easy. But life is short. We don't have a ton of time here. And I find myself asking the question, like, why do so many of us waste our time on shit that doesn't contribute to our happiness? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to organize all of these things into three categories. So, the things that make you happy, the things that make you unhappy, and then the in-between. Like, the in-betweeners are those people who don't necessarily make you unhappy, but they don't really make you happy either. And I want you to start with the people and things that make you unhappy. And I want you to ask yourself, how much does this person, place, or thing mean to me? If it means very little, then I would say cut them out of your life. However you want to do that is completely up to you. You know, I love the whole avoidance approach myself, but that's not always healthy. And so if you want to face it head on, I say go for it. But if this person, place, or thing means something to you, you have two choices in front of you. You can either let it go, like we did with the things that mean very little, or you can try to fix it. You can put energy into fixing what makes you unhappy. And maybe in the end, like, you end up letting it go anyways, but at least you will have tried. Or maybe you'll have a really raw and honest conversation with this person and something great can come from it. I want to share a really stupid story with you, but I hope that it makes things click for you. So I have this sister, and she has a very successful career. She works really hard, and she carries a lot on her shoulders every day. And one day, when we were visiting her, we somehow got onto the conversation of her breakfast habits. And she told me that every single morning, she eats cereal for breakfast. Which, like, okay, like, everybody has their routine. But here's the kicker of that story. She said to me, "I don't even really like cereal." She said that it's just a really quick option. And it's something that she can grab before her very busy day begins. Every freaking morning, she wakes up and starts her day with something that she doesn't even like. She's just fallen into this routine and she doesn't even question it. And she had never even really thought about it until we started talking about it. So I told her, I'm like, there's a million different things that you could eat that would take the same amount of time to prepare as cereal. So we ended up coming up with a ton of different things. And, you know, when I last asked her if she had swapped out the cereal for something else, she'd said that she did, but I don't really know if I trust her on that. I think she was just saying it to please me. But it's impossible to expect to be surrounded by happiness 24/7. Life happens, shit happens, and things go wrong all the time. But there are things in our lives that we are in control of, like our breakfast, or our friends, even our family, that we just allow ourselves to settle on. And I think that is killing our happiness. And I do it too. I have some of those people in my life that when I see their number show up on my phone, I cringe. Like, I also allow the opinions of some to stop me from doing exactly what I want in my life for fear of judgment. And I sacrifice my own happiness for the happiness of others. You know, and sometimes we think like, oh God, I'm so selfless. I don't think of myself as selfless. I think of myself as scared and a little bitch. So my question for you is, are there places in your life where you are sacrificing your own happiness? I'm going to finish this all up after the episode, but I just, as you're listening, I want you to think on that and just see where it takes you. Oh, that was long. Okay, On to this week's episode, The Good Wife, Living in the Closet. Tell me about yourself.
I'm a mom. I have two boys and a girl. I've been married since 1999. And I was active in my church most of my life until about 2009. It's weird to say this because I feel like a lot of people, when they do hear my story, they think I don't have any morals, but I do, and I feel like I contradict myself, but I do have a high standard of living, if that even makes any sense. One of the things I despise, which is completely ironic, is lies. I don't like to be lied to. I don't like to lie to people, which is why, the situation I'm in has me a little messed up in the sense of that isn't who I've ever been. So that is something, and it's probably a lot of my upbringing in the church that has made me who I am. I raise my kids in the church. My daughter is actually in the youth group, who is a praise and worship leader. And my son is going to be moving to the high school, and they're going to have him on the praise and worship team as well. So I'm raising my kids the same way that I was raised, even though my situation is the way it is.
Tell me about how you and your husband very first met.
So he was a DJ, and I met him in a club. He was sending drinks over to me and my friends, and that's how we met. We started dating after that, and it was very fast. My mom was living in another state, so he wanted to go with me, and about a month later, through knowing him, we moved to another state together.
Do you feel like you were all in right away, or do you feel like you had concerns about the relationship with him?
I was all in right away, but I was also a child. I was 18. He was 23. So that gap for me, I guess he was a little more mature than me. I say a little because things changed eventually and it became me the more mature one. But I was a kid. So I think being a kid, coming out of high school, it was my first real relationship. So I ran with it.
What was your marriage like before everything that we're going to talk about today?
So I thought it was good, but as things started to progress in my life, I looked back on a lot of things and I realized that they really weren't so good. There's just so many things. Example, I broke my ankle and he was in another country doing ministry work. And it was a severe break. They had to do a few surgeries. So he had to fly back. And when he walked in the hospital room, he was upset with me because he thought I was exaggerating this break that obviously I couldn't. And so he left the hospital and basically I was still there alone anyway. So the point is I found that there was a lot of things like that I kind of just pushed to the side, and they're major. Huge, but I still would push them to the side because of my religious, I guess my upbringing is, to be submissive to your husband and to be quiet in your spirit. And I'm not trying to mock the Bible. I still believe what I believe, but because of that, I just dismissed so many things that were done wrong to me. So at the time I thought it was a good marriage, but in reality it wasn't. And things like this transpired over and over throughout the entire marriage, where I believed that I had to listen to him, to whatever he said. He wasn't too controlling, but he was never helpful. I did everything, still do, but I did everything as far as taking care of a home is concerned. So I thought it was great, but it really wasn't.
I think that line in the Bible gets misconstrued a lot for people because the wrong person could use that to their advantage. And in the Bible, it's for healthy couples. It's for a man who loves his wife like God loved the church. But I really hate the word submissive. But in the right relationships, in the healthy ones, in the ones where a man isn't just looking for a woman to submit and he's also looking to give everything that he has, it works. But when it's not that, it can create, I think, very toxic levels in the relationship.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's what happened to me. I mean, we had a church and he wound up having an affair with my best friend. She was my best friend since my sophomore year in high school. And that was, it was really devastating to me. As you can imagine, it was a double whammy that came at me between him and her. And I had just had my daughter, so she was already a year and a half. I wound up calling our original pastor and I wanted some counsel because I was devastated. And he convinced me that, you know, that my husband was the victim and that I needed, he literally used those words. He said, "You have to picture it this way. He is actually the victim in this." And he was, you know, this is his way to scream out for help. And it's my job to be there for him. So I wound up staying in the marriage that he actually, you know, told me he didn't want me, that he wanted to marry my best friend. And so it was really hard, but I did it because, again, I really, really wanted to please God in all ways. I really wanted to live a life worthy of the gospel. So that is what I did. What I thought I was doing, but in reality, I wound up hurting myself in the long run.
Can you just give me a little insight into what exactly he meant by your husband was a victim? Like, he was a victim because he got his dick wet? Like, I'm curious how he presented that to you, because that sounds like some bullshit.
it does, and I don't know why I believed it. He said that to picture a car accident and a drunk driver, and that would be my husband in this scenario, that a drunk driver hit somebody and he didn't hurt them, but he was injured. So they're okay. They're gonna survive this just fine. But because he was the one drinking and doing things he shouldn't be doing, now he's the injured. So as hard as it is for me, you know, as the person who is going to survive it, I have to be there for him because he's the one who's going to go through so much now.
Oh, man, the poor guy. Can't imagine going through that.
Yeah.
That is the worst advice I've ever heard before.
Same. And I fell for it. I mean, hook, line, and sinker. Like, I was all in, completely committed to trying to get my husband back as far as his heart was concerned. Because he was here, but he wanted to be there with her.
Eventually, there is a change in you. And that change comes in the form of this secret. But before we get to what actually happened, I'm curious to hear about the feelings that were going on internally for you leading up to all of this.
I would say the first couple of years, I was really dead set on making my marriage work, because what I didn't say yet was my best friend is the one who kept telling me I would come to her with my marital issues because I didn't know what was happening, because my husband had never acted this way before. She convinced me to have a pregnancy test done because, you know, she just said, you know, if you're pregnant, then you can start your marriage. And I don't even know where that came from, but I did what she said. And I took a test and it came out positive. So I was calling her and she wasn't answering, and then him, he wasn't answering. That's when I kind of put it all together. And so I felt that because I had my kid inside of me, that it was God's will for me to stay. So between, you know, this life that was breathed in me and my pastor's advice, I gave it my all for a few years, and things just got harder and harder and harder with him. He was terrible through the pregnancy. I mean, that's a whole other story in itself. He was horrible to me. He, at one point, there was even a rape. He, you know, I didn't want to sleep with him, and he forced himself on me. He turned to drinking, which he hadn't drank in, I don't even, maybe 10 years or so. So I still stayed because I still kept forgiving him and forgiving him and forgiving him. And then maybe a couple years later, I didn't give up on the marriage. I was still here, but I decided not to apply myself so much because, I mean, I was fasting and praying and on the daily and waking up super early just so that I can pray for him and over my home and my kids. And I really, really wanted to have this, you know, successful, godly marriage. And it came to a point where I just gave up the fasting and praying and stuff, but I still stayed. Like, I still wanted, you know, my marriage to work for my kids' sake, but that's where it became. It went from, I wanted it to work for myself and for God, to I wanted to work for my kids.
Can we talk for just a second about the rape? Because this is actually something that we've never talked about on this podcast, is being raped while married to somebody. And I just, the reason that I'm asking you to talk about this is because I want to make sure that if by chance there is someone out there listening who is very uneducated, I just want them to understand how that happens.
Yeah. You know, he was drinking. We were outside and, you know, he played guitar. And so he was playing. We actually were becoming friends, which I felt like we never were friends even before. And we were talking out there, and I think that decided that he wanted to sleep with me that day, and I didn't. I was exhausted. Again, I said I was pregnant. So it was something I didn't want. And he just kept drinking and drinking and drinking, and then he wound up coming into the bedroom. And I told him, like, I don't want to have sex with you right now. And he was like, well, you're going to. And then he started pouring beer all over me. And this has never happened in my marriage. It never occurred. He's never been like this. And I didn't know what was happening. And I kept telling him, no. And I cried. And he told me, you know, to stop, that I'm his wife, and that my body is not my own. Again, quoting scriptures that, you know, my body's not my own, that it's his, and I have no choice but to sleep with him. And I just kept crying, and I was like, I don't want to, you need to stop. And he continued. The morning when he woke up, I was gone. I took my daughter and I left because I didn't want to be in that situation. And I knew I didn't need to be in that situation, regardless of my body is his or whatever he was claiming. I knew that it was wrong, and I left. I was actually at our church, and he wound up coming there and telling me that he was sorry and it would never happen again, and for me to please come home. And of course I did it. It never happened again. That was the only time. I mean, you know, he didn't hurt me. It wasn't like a beating. It was nothing like that, but it was still non-consensual.
First of all, I'm so sorry that that happened to you. Second, I think that listening to you tell that story back, that was way more intense than what I thought you were going to say. That's, in my head, that's not how I imagined rape inside a marriage to happen. That's a pretty awful story. And to hear you say, like, you know, oh, he didn't beat me, anything like that. I hope that you know, though, that at least that story is a lot worse than what I had imagined and built up in my own head. And it is not okay.
Yeah, it was tough. And I feel like there probably is a lot of other people who are like me, who wanted to listened to the word of God and you know, gave it all, and you think that you should be in that situation, and you actually believe that your body's not your own, and you allow these things to happen. I'm more than sure I'm not the only one this has happened to, because I believed it strongly. I knew that it was wrong, but because of what I was taught, I felt like I had to forgive, which I do believe in forgiveness, but that doesn't mean I have to keep myself in that situation.
How did the way that you view your husband change after that situation?
It was the same. I was just so devastated by him that I honestly didn't even think about him as a husband anymore. The reason that I stayed where I stayed and what I did, what I did was literally because of my upbringing, and because I was told, even my mom told me to stay with him, that it was a mistake. So I wasn't looking at him like a husband. As soon as the affair happened, I believe that that was gone in an instant. I was no longer passionate about him, nothing. It kind of all went away when I found out what he was doing. So when the rape happened, it was the same situation. I was already kind of done with him in that sense. I was still trying to make it work, but my view of him stayed the same, because that's when I started looking back, like I told you, in my marriage, and I realized he was actually a creep, like, the whole time. That kind of just, it helped me to see everything.
I want to move past this part of the story, and I want to get into this other part of your secret, and just tell me about what happened.
So throughout this thing that went on with my husband, there was a friend of mine who I've known for years. She was a part of the family in a sense, you know, distant relative. So I've known her for years, but we didn't really know each other. And when I was pregnant, my second child, which is when, you know, I found out about the affair, she became my best friend. And I felt like at the time, and I still believe this, that she was given to me in a time where I felt like I had no one, because, you know, my entire family was, well, not everybody knew, but my brother and my mother were like, stay. And, you know, and then my best friend obviously was my best friend. So I was in a situation where I was alone, and she came in. And she was my friend. I was with her all the time. And this happened for years. We were just best friends. That was it. You know, and about 3 years into our friendship, she had a talk with me, and she told me she was attracted to me. And of course, I was like, no, this is, you know, God is not going to be okay with this. And so I shied away. But actually, inside, I was happy. So I knew something was happening to me. And then I thought, well, I'm probably just flattered because of all the stuff I've gone through, you know, that somebody was wanting me for me. So that's when I was like, okay, it's probably just flattery, you know, and we never talked about it again. That was it. She said, I just want to tell you, and we'll never discuss it again, because she didn't want the friendship ruined. So we just continued with our friendship. And then a couple of months later, you know, we were in the car and we were like playing around. And we weren't completely sexual, but there was some definite touching there. And then I panicked. When I panicked, she dropped me off at my house, and I told my husband. And he was like, you got to stay away from her. So he was like, what are you going to do? I was like, I need to get away from my city. We need to leave. So we literally packed up the next day. We went to go visit a friend in another state, because I just needed to get away. And I thought, if I'm with my husband and my children, then maybe, you know, I won't do anything.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What exactly happened in the car? Like you said, it wasn't sexual, but the only reason that I'm asking is not for like sexual details. I'm curious what happened that led you to the point where you got really, really scared. The fact that you would tell your husband about it and then you wanted to get away.
because like I was, you know, it was literally like touching her ears, and I knew what I was doing, and I knew that it was turning her on, and I didn't stop. I kept on. And that's what scared me, is I knew exactly what I was doing, and I knew that she was enjoying it. And then I got scared because I was enjoying watching her. And that's why I said it wasn't sexual, because it was like really just like touching her ears. And then there was a water bottle like in between her legs, and I grabbed the water bottle and I saw her like move. She was just really excited, and I was excited watching her. So I panicked.
Do you feel like from that moment, did you start asking yourself, like, am I gay? What does this mean? Like, did you go into that panic of questioning who you were, or were you more panicked that you just felt like you did something you shouldn't have, more like cheating?
No, it was more of me like, am I gay? I had already been questioning myself, because like I said, a couple months prior when she told me she was interested in me, I really liked hearing that. So I was already questioning myself. So then when that happened, I panicked, like, you're gay. Like, this has to stop now.
So you guys go out of town.
Yeah. And the whole time I'm calling her and texting her the entire time. So leaving was obviously not the solution, because it only intensified the situation. Like, I wanted to be with her. And our conversations always ended with like, I miss you and I love you. And we had never done that before because we're just friends, but it wasn't in my head. We still weren't there yet, but we were definitely saying like, I love you and I love you and I miss you. And then, you know, my husband still didn't want me to see her. He was still against me seeing her, which I don't blame him at the time. And we came back, and a couple of weeks later, my cousin, who is her sister-in-law, had a baby. She went to the hospital and I went to the hospital, and that was my way of seeing her. So, and I still hadn't admitted that I liked her, that I had feelings for her. I still didn't, to myself, to anybody. I just knew I was too excited to go see her, and I didn't know why. And when I got to the hospital, I saw her and I knew immediately, like, she's the one. Like, I need to be with her. So again, I panicked and I left the hospital, and I just left her, and I didn't speak to her the whole night. She kept calling and texting and calling, and I just kept praying and crying because I thought it was wrong. I thought what I felt was wrong, and it was going to get me, you know, a straight ticket to hell. And I was panicking about this because there was no doubt in my mind at this point what I wanted and who I wanted and what I felt. And I wound up calling her, you know, in the middle of the night after hours of thinking, and I stopped fighting and I just told her, you know, I'm attracted to you too. And we talked until the next day, just on the phone, about our feelings for each other. And that was it. It's never changed since then.
This is kind of a sidebar question, but it was a question that I wish that I had asked in the other interview that I did that was a little bit similar to yours. Before this, being a religious person, what were your thoughts and beliefs on gay people?
I believed that when people would come to me, because like I said, we were a pastor of a church, and they would tell me that they were gay and they would be scared. I remember embracing them and telling them, like, don't be afraid, that, you know, we all sin. So I did believe it was a sin, but I didn't believe it was something to be fearful of. I didn't think, talking to people, I didn't think they were going to go to hell. I remember telling them, you have to keep being who you're being, and it's just a sin, just like everybody else sins. So I did think it was a sin, definitely. But I remember embracing them and knowing that they were not going to go to hell for it. But I guess when it happened to me, because of how much of the word that I knew, I thought immediately, you're going to hell, which is very weird because I never thought that about anybody who came to me before that.
When you guys admitted your feelings to each other, did you feel like this is going to be the end of my marriage?
No, I didn't. I didn't. At the time, it was like an affair. Like, I was still sleeping with him and sleeping with her. And I mean, I even got pregnant again and had another baby. So it wasn't like that until a few years later, where I no longer wanted him at all. Like, the thought of him touching me made me cringe, and I did just want to be with her. So it took a few years for me to realize that my marriage was definitely over.
Talk to me about the progression of this new relationship that you found yourself in. Like, how did it build? Like, what did your first interactions look like after admitting to yourselves that you had feelings for each other and that stuff?
At first, I didn't want to have an affair, so everything was just on the phone because we still weren't allowed to see each other. So we were, it was just talking about what we wanted, how we wanted to be together. And then it progressed. I finally saw her. And then, so what we would do is, I didn't want to have an affair, so we wouldn't touch each other, but we would talk about what we wanted to do with each other in front of each other. And eventually we did kiss. And after that, there was no limits. You know, we continued the affair, we head on, like, we just went straight for it. And then she moved next to me, so that way I could see her often. So it turned out, just seeing her, we saw each other every day, and it would be like for maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes to 20 minutes, you know, to hours. Every day of my life, I would leave. And what happened is, I was pregnant, and I went to the doctor, and they told me that my son was not well, that he was ill. And they gave me all this paperwork so that I can do research on his sickness. And I got scared, and I thought, it immediately, what came to my mind, because this was about 10 months into our relationship, was, it's because you're sinning. And so I decided at that point to come clean. Unfortunately, I didn't warn her, and she had a good relationship with my other kids. So that was heartbreaking for her, because that was severed immediately without even a goodbye. And I told my husband what happened, and that I wanted to be with her. And he told me no, that I couldn't be with her, and that there is no judge, you know, in our state that would allow us to be together, because we have a conservative state, and they will look down upon two lesbians wanting to raise three children, and it was never going to happen. And I let him know my feelings for her, and that I really, really felt that was the best move for me and for the kids. And it didn't work out that way. I don't know how I let him get in my head, but I believed him that he would take my kids from me and that I would never be with them. So I panicked and I stayed with him. But from that, she was with me for my whole pregnancy. She was there. He refused to go to any appointments, even though they were, you know, I had to go every week because of the situation that I was in with my son. And I was on bed rest, even though I would go to her every day. And she was the one there for me the whole time. And I believe that we just got stronger from that. I mean, after I had him, I would go in the middle of the night to her house, and she would let me sleep. Wow, she took care of him for me. It was things like that. Like, I literally had a double life. Like, we were a couple for sure. I had more, I believe still, I have more of a marriage with her than I ever did with my husband.
Was she openly gay during your guys's friendship?
No, not at all. No one knows. She has one sister and one niece that know, and the only reason is because they caught on to us and they asked us, so we told them, and that is it. Nobody else knows.
When you told your husband, were you telling him because you were looking for his approval, or were you telling him because you wanted to go?
I only told him because I wanted my son to be okay. And I thought what I was doing was a sin, not my relationship, not loving her, but having an affair. And I didn't think that that was right. And I wanted to stop the affair.
Were you hoping for possibly like an open marriage or like?
Oh no.
Okay.
No, I don't want anything to do with him like that at all. I wanted us to be on good terms for my kids. I wanted us to be able to work together because I grew up in a divorced family and it was horrible, which is why I was adamant about staying for my children.
When all of this was going on and you were going to her house late at night and you were living this double life, did your husband wonder where you were? Like, did he know that you were going to her house?
No, he didn't know. I mean, he knew something was off because, like I told you in the beginning, I was sleeping with both of them. And then eventually it turned into like, you know, once every 6 months with him and then once a year to once every 2 years, once every 3 years. And eventually it's become nothing. And so he does definitely question constantly if I'm seeing somebody else. He doesn't know that it's her anymore, but he definitely knows I'm seeing somebody else. But he didn't know I was gone in the middle of the night. He never noticed.
Was that time that you told him when you were pregnant with your son, was that the last time you guys talked about it?
No, there was a few other times. One time he asked me what was wrong and why I was sad, and I told him because I missed her. That she was my best friend and that she came to me when I needed somebody and she's been there for me. And he was upset and he was like, well, I don't understand why you'd miss her. Like, she ruined our marriage. And I told him, no, you ruined our marriage. And he was like, well, you're supposed to forgive me for that and move on. And I said, I did, but it's not about that. She didn't ruin the marriage. It was ruined way before her. And I said, I want to be with her. So I did tell him again, and this is maybe my son was about a year. Ever since then, we have not discussed her.
How old is your son now?
10.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I've been with her for 11 and a half years.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah, it's been a long time living this life.
Does your husband think that you still see her? Like, does he, or is she still completely banned?
Still completely banned, like 100%. So much so, like I said, we share family in the sense that my cousin is her sister-in-law. So, well, there's events. I know she's going to be there, I don't go. If she knows I'm going to be there, she won't go. It's kind of a messy situation that we're in because we are, you know, related distantly.
I'm going to say this, and I think that I hope you don't think I'm an asshole for saying it, but there is no way that you are happy in your life living this way.
No, I'm not. And I don't think you're an asshole for saying that because I'm not. I hate it. Like I told you, who I am, I hate lies. So a double life is definitely a lie. I adore my children and I hate, you know, telling them that I'm, because we go on trips. I do everything with her. So I have to not tell my kids the truth. I don't lie to them. I just tell them I'm going to, you know, whatever stage or whatever. I don't tell them what I'm doing, who I'm doing it with, I guess you can say. I mean, my oldest, my daughter, she has her suspicions and she knows. I believe she knows just from the things that she says. And she's seen a few pictures here and there. And she asks me all the time, you know, how come we're not allowed to see this woman anymore? And so I'm sure she's asking because she wants more details.
I want you to imagine for a minute that your oldest daughter finds herself in a relationship and it makes her really, really happy. It makes her feel like, and again, I'm talking like, you know, in the future when she's older, but she finds a relationship and it makes her really, really happy. Like it makes her feel whole and it's something that she's always wanted. Would you ever say to her, you can't have that because
dad says you can't, even though it makes her happy. It completes her, and it's like a really bright spot in her life. Would you ever say to her, you can't have that, you can't go after that, you can't be with that person?
No, never. I would tell her, go for it, 100%. Go all in. Life is too short, and I really believe that. I really do. So, like I said, I feel like a hypocrite in my beliefs and then my life that I'm living, but I do believe life is too short to just waste it, especially if you found love, finally, like true love. And that's what I found with her. Like, I've never felt what I feel when I'm with her. Even when I'm not with her, I'm always thinking of her. And it's been so many years, and it feels like we're, you know, in the newlywed stage of a marriage, and we're not. I mean, we're so far gone. And of course we have ups and downs, a lot of downs, because I am married, and it's hard for her. So we have a lot of downs, a lot. But for some reason, the love that we share is so strong that nothing takes us away from each other.
So let me ask you this. Why don't you give that same weight to your own life?
There's just so many factors. From my end, my side, I'm married and I don't have a job. I do photography, but I don't have like a good enough paying job, I guess you could say. And that's not why I'm not here for the money. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying there's so many different factors. The life that the kids have is, they think it's a good one. They're enjoying it. I also grew up in a divorced family without a dad, and I don't want that for my kids. And the way that he is, he's just like my father. So I could totally see him not being there, because he's in the home and he's still kind of not there. So in my mind, I've convinced myself that at least they have him physically around, even though, you know, emotionally they come to me for all their, you know, all their other needs. Also, you know, her, like, you know, none of her family knows. So I don't know how that would work or where that would go. We've discussed it a few times, and it never ends up a good conversation, because ultimately I'm still in this marriage. So I feel like if I wasn't in this marriage, her and my conversation would go a whole other place. So basically the point is, I'm making excuses for staying. That just hit me.
I don't think that you're making excuses. I think that it's scary. I think that there's so many different moving parts to this. But what I want to try to convey to you is that you not happy, you living a life where you're always wanting more out of it, and you are always, you know, or you're having to live in secret, it wears at a person. It really knocks a person down. And I am not saying that you are a bad mom or anything like that. But what I'm trying to say is that there's no way that you are being the best you in every aspect of your life, because I don't think that you're happy. And sometimes I think that some people want to think that putting our happiness above others is selfish, but I don't see it that way. I think that making sure that we are happy means that everyone around us is getting the best version of ourselves, and everyone around us is getting more love and more light. And I think that your marriage is something that sucks life out of you. I think that your girlfriend, she adds life into you, but I think that your marriage sucks it away. So you're never complete. You're never full. And you never get to just be the person that I think that you really want to be for everyone.
Yeah, I agree. I do. It's exhausting. Extremely exhausting.
And I mean, in the words of yourself, life is too short.
It is. It happens way too fast. Like I said, when we started this, you know, I had a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and now I have a 10-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 16-year-old. It just flew by. And I do think about, I could have had, like, all those vacations I went on with her, they could have come with me. They could have been there with us. And I think they would have had a good life. I have a lot of regrets not moving faster on this. But I still wonder how long I'm going to keep this up.
When you say that you wonder how long you're going to keep it up, ultimately, do you think that the end is the end of your relationship or the end of your marriage?
Yeah, no, not the end of my relationship. I see myself with her for the long haul. Like, I want to grow old with her. It's my marriage. I mean, it's already over. But I mean, on paper and him out, I don't know how long I'll stick around. I don't want to, but I don't know why I don't leave. It has nothing to do with him. Him and I are nothing anymore. I've been sleeping on the couch for 9 years. 9 years. And he knows it's over. We basically live like roommates. I mean, I take care of the kids and he works and that's it. I mean, I also homeschool, which is a big part of why I'm here at home with them and why I stay, because I feel like I'm giving them, like, we have a good life. And yes, we're part of other things and they do, you know, hang out with other people, but I'm with them all the time. So I guess I fear that all that's going to go away.
Okay. I know that I am being really annoying right now, but I want to say this because I think that it's important. And I think that sometimes we want to argue that, well, at least we're all together and, you know, my kids have both their parents and they get to, you know, they have a great life. But your kids also see that even if you try to be sneaky, I promise you, your kids know that you sleep on the couch and your kids see that you and your husband don't interact in the way that like people who are in love should interact. And they don't see you guys touch and they don't see you love and they don't see all these things. And I think that sometimes you want to say like, oh, well, you know, they're getting to see us and still be a happy family. But does that communicate to your kids that they should maybe settle in the future, that they should, you know, it's fine. You can just stay with someone forever just because that's how you're supposed to do it. And yeah, maybe you'll sleep on the couch for 10 years and maybe you'll never feel completely fulfilled in life, but that's okay because that, you know, that's what my parents did. My parents did that. That's like the conversation that they have with themselves. Whereas, yeah, you going out and you living with your girlfriend full time and you guys living a life that is full of love and nurturing, that can communicate to your kids. Like, you know, at first I think your kids would probably be angry with you and there'd be a lot of feelings there. But I think that eventually what they could see is that, like, my mom did something that was terrifying to her and she went after what it is that she wanted and she fought for something that made her happy and she was truly happy. And I want for myself moving forward, I don't want to settle like my mom did. I want to do what my mom did when she really went after it.
I think about that all the time. I don't want my kids to have the life that I have. I want them to be 100% happy. So that, I think that's why I get confused, why I'm here. I know these things, but yet I'm still here. And a part of me, it is fearful of losing my kids, but I don't think I'm going to. My daughter has told me, we have friends. I have a friend who's in the same situation as me, a similar one as me. And her daughter and my daughter were friends. And she didn't like the way she treated her daughter. And she told me, Mom, we need to go have a talk with them. We need to go to their city and go talk to them because she needs to know that her mom can love whoever she wants as long as she's still being a mom and she's a good mom. And then she told me, if this ever happened with us, she's like, I would completely forgive you for everything and just be there and be so happy for you. So I know that I know she'd be okay. I don't know about my sons, but I know she'd be okay with it. It's still scary though.
I think that listening to your story and hearing all of this, my biggest want in life is not like world peace or anything like that. It's just for everyone to find happiness, because I think that all of our problems in the world get fixed when everyone finds happiness. I think that all of these angry people in the world, they cause so many issues, and there's so many problems that arise because people are just angry and people are mad. And if every person could find their own internal happiness, I think that the world would be such a better place. And I think that you deserve to be fully happy. I think that staying in your marriage, it might be what you feel like is the right thing to do in this moment. But I mean, one of my very best friends just found out that she has breast cancer. And thankfully, it is, the doctor said it is the best, worst news that she could get. It is very treatable and things are going to be great. But there are people who wake up every day and they feel off and they go to a doctor and they find out, hey, you have stage 4 cancer and you're probably going to die in a couple months. And I think that in those moments, those are the people who realize, like, I should have gone after what it is I wanted to. And mind you, I'm being a total hypocrite telling you this. I live every day like a total drama queen and not doing the things I want and losing sleep over the stupidest of things. So this advice is also to myself. But here's the thing is, I think that had you come to me and you had said, you know, we've been doing this for a few months, well, maybe it's not going to work out. Like, I don't know, at a few months, but this is 11 and a half years that you have been with this woman and you know, like, you know, this is what you want. There's no doubt about it. 11 and a half years is a very long time. And I think, I just want you to live the life that you want to live.
Yeah, I do too.
And at the end of the day, your kids are always going to be your kids. And I think that maybe in the beginning, they aren't going to understand this. And maybe for some of them, it'll take what feels like a really long time for them to get it. But I think that eventually they're going to see that they have this mom who is so happy. And I want to go back to another point too about, you know, you'd said like you couldn't live off of your job or whatever. And if you're happy in your life and if you're going after everything that you want and you're living life to the fullest, your potential, your earning potential is going to skyrocket. Your ability to work, and maybe it's not, you know, doing photography, maybe it's something else, will present itself. Like, I just think that when we are happier, I truly believe that everything else falls into place.
I believe that too. I also believe like transparency is a big key too. Because I'm free to be me. So then I can really be expressive in whatever I do. I feel like I hold back probably too much.
So here's what I want to ask you. I want you to, it's the last thing that I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
I want you to imagine that you came across this episode. And I want you to imagine that you are listening and hearing this woman's story who has been with the love of her life for 11 and a half years, but still stuck in her marriage. And I would be curious to know, what would be the things that you would say to this woman that you're listening to?
Why are you wasting time? That would probably be my first question. And that you haven't been in, you're not in a marriage. It's not a marriage. What I have here is not a marriage. It's not even a partnership. Like, I literally, we're basically not even roommates. I don't even know what we are. So I would just say, you're wasting your time. You're not in a marriage. And do you really want your kids to be raised that way? I know you don't want them without a father, But is being raised this way any better? I would definitely have to ask that question because it's not.
And I don't want you to think that I don't understand where you're at. I hope that doesn't, what I'm saying doesn't come across that way, because I can't imagine being in the position that you're in. I think that there's so many moving parts to this, and I think that there are so many things at stake. I get it. Like, it's a real gamble, but I think the thing that I just keep going back to is just that you're not happy, and I think that you deserve to be happy, and I think that I just hope that one day you find it, not just partial happiness, but full happiness.
Every night I hope and pray a dream lover will come my way, a girl to hold in my arms and know the magic of her charms, 'cause I want a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone.
Do you get now why this episode had such a long intro? Like, maybe you don't have a secret girlfriend of 11 years, and maybe you're not stuck in a dead-end marriage, but we all have something, and maybe our something seems really small in comparison, but this show isn't designed to try and compare battle wounds. This woman didn't just find herself here because of a single decision. She sacrificed her happiness time and time again at the expense of her church, at the expense of her husband, and honestly, even for her kids. And slowly, over time, she ended up here. I'm not saying that this woman is miserable. You know, I'm not trying to say like, oh, look at what an awful life she lives. I'm not saying that, but I don't think it's a far stretch just to say that she isn't the happiest that she could be. So, I just want you to ask yourself, am I living a life that makes me happy? Or am I sacrificing my happiness for everyone else? I'm going to do the same. I'm answering the same question right along with you. It's in my head. I'm thinking about it. And hopefully, going through all of this wakes us up and makes us realize that, you know, we want more out of our lives and we want more happiness. So that's that. Thank you guys for listening. I will see all of you next week. 'Cause I want a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Please don't make me dream alone. I beg you, don't make me.
Everybody has a secret.